Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 485.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and I'm recording this before I rush out of town for a training. Very much looking forward to that, and I'll be sure to post on Instagram some of the pictures of where I'm going. Should be very beautiful, I hope. I'm super excited to share this week's episode with you. I had so much fun with this guest. My guest today is Terry Cole. Terry Cole is a licensed psychotherapist and global relationship and empowerment expert who is the author of Boundary Boss and the newer book, Too Much. For over two decades, Terry has worked with a diverse group of clients that includes everyone from stay-at-home moms to celebrities and Fortune 500 CEOs. She has a gift for making complex psychological concepts accessible and actionable so that clients and students achieve sustainable change. And she has a gift for taking relationship concepts and communication and boundary challenges and making them easier to understand. And I thought she was so funny in this conversation. I'm taking this book on my flight because I haven't had time to finish it, but I'm really enjoying it. I always kind of hesitate with that codependency word. I don't like labels. But I do really, really appreciate the concept and the dynamics that she's talking about. What we talked about in this interview is how codependency and highly sensitive people tend to go together and how narcissism fits into the whole dynamic of our relational strategies when we are highly sensitive people who tend towards these codependent relational patterns. So for so many of us who are therapists, we know this pattern. We're helpers and it's who we are. And sometimes it's too much who we are. But whoever you are, as you listen, I hope you will find some wisdom, some encouragement that these dynamics are real and that they can change. I was pretty blown away when I picked up her book and saw myself in one of the sections. I was like, oh, so I hope you'll listen with self-compassion and a little bit of open-mindedness and see what you think. Want to let you know, if you are a therapist, specifically one whose clients have trauma, as most of us and our clients do, you will want to know that Trauma Therapist Network membership is opening up in June. Later in the month of June, the registration link will be sent out to everyone who's on the waiting list. So if you're not already on the waiting list, there's a link in the show notes to join the waiting list. And when registration opens, we'll send out a discount code to everyone who's on the waiting list to get a special discount on your first month. So if this is something you need, I hope you will add your name to the waiting list and I'll see you in the community when membership opens. As always, thank you for listening to Therapy Chat.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I am thrilled to be with Terry Cole, author of the new book, Too Much, A Guide to Breaking the Cycle of High-Functioning Codependency. And this is going to knock our socks off. It's already knocked my socks off before we started. So first of all, I want to say, Terry, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
You're welcome. So I'm super excited to dive into this topic of high-functioning codependency and also this magnetic thing that happens between high-functioning codependency and narcissism and how these two styles are drawn together sometimes or often. So before we get into it, though, can you start off by telling our audience just a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I've been a psychotherapist for the past 27 years with a private practice, and I've had more of a public platform since about 2011, let's say. Started doing online courses in 2015. I would say female empowerment is my specialty. I have a particular interest in boundaries, love, codependency. Those are probably my biggest things. And father and mother wounds as well. I talk quite a bit about my next book that comes out in 26. Is called Big Daddy Issues. So that's about father wounds, obviously.
I got both.
Yeah, who doesn't? But before I became a psychotherapist, I was actually a talent agent negotiating contracts for supermodels and celebrities. And my own therapeutic journey is what really inspired me to become a therapist, where I was changing my life. Like, I stopped drinking when I was in college, believe it or not, my senior year of college with 3 months left to go. I quit drinking. Like, who does that? It's like the worst time in the world to quit drinking. But I was like, if I could stop now, I could just stop. Cause I've been drinking since I was young. I was probably 12 when I started. So I got into therapy young and could not believe. I was like, this is the best kept secret in the world. Why isn't everyone doing this? Like, you can literally change your friggin' life. I was so into it, and then got super into self-help. And this was back in the 80s, people. So you're talking about the road less traveled. And, you know, you think about what were the popular self-help.
Why do I think I am nothing without a man?
Yeah, all the books. And really got into Deepak Chopra. And then I studied a ton with Deepak and David Simon, his partner in the Chopra Center, and my friend David G. And, you know, brought meditation into my life. So as I was on my own evolutionary path psychologically, I outgrew entertainment. Even though I had a fat job, I was running a bicoastal talent, the New York office of a bicoastal talent agency representing elite models. Like, actually, that's what I was doing. And I just got too healthy to stay. I was like, I have to get out of here because this is not a hotbed of mental health. And there's got to be something better I could do with my life than make supermodels richer. And there was. I could, because really the thing in the end of my career as a talent agent, I could no longer deny that I did not care about the movie deal, the Pantene deal that I was negotiating. I didn't care. What I cared about was getting people into therapy, eating disorder clinics, drug treatment clinics. Like, I was literally getting every single day, I was making referrals, and I wasn't even a therapist yet.
You were actually a problem. You're disrupting the system.
Exactly. I kept going into the last job I had. I was running the TV department at Ford modeling agency that Katie Ford had taken over from her mother, Eileen Ford. And I would go into her office. And this was after I'd already become a therapist. And then somehow entertainment, it's just like this, they could just suck you back in with money. I was getting married. They were like, it's temporary. Someone's going on maternity. I was like, how temporary? 2 months max. Of course, it was 7 months. But anyway, it was so much money. And I was getting married. And I was like, all right, can I do it? So I was working like 100 hours a week, seeing clients and doing that and doing all the things. But I would go into Katie's office and be like, do you think it's possible that the booking agents could stop calling the models girls when they're grown women? And she was like, yeah, okay, probably not. And then I would go in and complain about like the models' apartments and where the kids were living. And I was so worried. Finally, after like the fifth time I went in like 3 weeks, she was like, Tara, do you really want to be doing this anymore? And I was like, no, definitely not. So I knew it was time to leave. And then I started my practice, and this was in 97, I think, is when I started my practice. Been doing it ever since. Became obsessed with boundaries because of my own. I mean, listen, what do they say, Laura? And you're probably the same. You teach what you most need to learn. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So everything I write books about is because I was a freaking disaster when it came to that thing. Like, I didn't know a boundary from the boardwalk. Like, I literally had no idea. and didn't know that the pain that I was experiencing in my relationships had to do with the fact that I didn't know how to set and maintain boundaries. And what I saw in my therapy practice once I started being a therapist was the same thing. It was like all these presenting problems. I could just like follow the dots backwards to be like, oh, this skill set, nobody has it. Nobody knows how to do it. So that was what my first book was about. And then this second book, Too Much, Breaking the Cycle of High Functioning Codependency, really came out of that because I started seeing all these similarities, again, for the women in my practice. And why did there need to be a new flavor of codependency? Well, it was my personal flavor of codependency. Overfunctioning, overgiving, overdoing. So I didn't identify with being a codependent at all because I was like, obviously, if you're codependent, you need to be enabling an alcoholic. Duh, everybody knows that, which is, of course, not true. But it has this bad rap. So my clients couldn't see themselves in the problem. I would say, oh, hey, what you're describing, that's a codependent pattern. We should talk about that. And they'd be like, what? No, Tara, everyone depends on me. I'm making all the money. I'm making all the moves, right? I'm doing all the emotional labor. Nothing happens if I don't do it. So who am I dependent on? Like, you're dependent on controlling every person in your life, but okay. So I added this moniker. And then I started doing a whole bunch of research about what are the differences. So I look at HFC, high functioning codependency, as codependency for our modern life, because that's what it is. It's almost like when the 70s came, listen, this is my non-scientific guess at what happened, or it's my hypothesis that late 60s, early 70s, when finally women could be anything besides something different than a nurse, a teacher, a secretary, right? There was a period of time that's literally all you could do.
100%.
Like, we were so pumped to be able to like go to college and become engineers and therapists and other things that we sort of made a deal with the devil. We're like, don't worry, I'll still do everything else. Just let me use my brain. So don't worry, I'll still do everything at home. I'll still do all the cooking.
Nothing
all the
will suffer.
You won't suffer. You won't have to do more. I'll work full time and still handle everything. And you know, that was like a bad deal. So that's part of, again, my non-social science. I have no evidence to support that, but I do believe that there was something in that. And so once I added high functioning to codependency, all my clients could raise their hands without shame, saying, me, I'm the problem, it's me. That's a quote Taylor Swift, but I just did, because they were burnt out and exhausted and they know they're high functioning. And they're like, you're right. I do feel kind of underappreciated. So there was an in. And I knew that we needed help because how could I help them if they didn't see themselves in the problem? Because the irony with high functioning codependency is that the more capable you are, the less codependency looks like codependency, but it's still codependency. You know what I mean?
I know. Because I started reading your book. And as I said to you before we started recording, I was like, oh, man. Because what you were saying about your clients not wanting to see themselves that way, although I have to tell you, just from the brief amount of your book I've read, when you said you were going in and trying to address the models, apartments and stuff, I was like, oh, I know, that's high functioning codependency. She's managing everyone and everything.
Exactly.
And that I can super relate to. And I want to say, like, what was coming up for me while you were talking is, this sort of true for myself, but I think for so many of us in our culture, that people don't want to feel like a victim. So when you think of that codependency paradigm, that's this thought of this like martyr, long suffering. It's like, I'm not that. I don't need anything from anyone.
Yeah. All right. Two things I want to say. First, I want to establish my definition of high functioning codependency. So Right. We're on the same page. And then if we could, let's talk about traits and then we'll get into whatever else.
Awesome.
So I say that high functioning codependency is you being overly invested in the feeling states, the outcomes, circumstances, careers, finances, relationships of the people in your life to the detriment of your own internal peace. To the detriment of your emotional or mental well-being, maybe your financial well-being, you might be giving people money that you can't afford or whatever. And I make that distinction very specifically, obviously, because we're all lovers and mothers and sisters and citizens. Like, we're decent people. Of course we want the people we love to have what they want and to be happy. That's not what I'm talking about, because when you're an HFC, you go from caring and having compassion. I want you, Laura, to get what you want. When you're an HFC, I feel responsible for you, Laura, getting what you want. That is different. That is crossing a line. So it's really about the overinvestment and feeling overly responsible for things that are not on our side of the street.
Yeah. And it's hard because in the social conditioning of being a female, we give, we're nurturing, we're caring. And, you know, there's this like worry about our kids and wanting them to be okay. Or maybe that's just those of us whose childhoods weren't the best. But I think probably everybody, I don't really know, because, you know, most of the people that I interact with are either my clients or other people whose childhoods were not ideal.
Most people's childhoods were not ideal. We can say that as therapists. We know this. We've seen zillions of people over the years. But it's more than that. You know, where I like to make a qualifier that you don't have to have had a traumatic childhood to be an HFC, right? Okay. Just the patriarchy itself, just being a woman in this patriarchal system where we are taught to, where self-sacrifice, the more self-sacrificing, the better. People will describe someone and be like, oh my God, you would love Betty. She would give anybody the shirt off her back. I want to be like, keep your shirt on, Betty. Like, why are we giving anyone our shirt? Like, how about some discernment? Maybe if it's a kid who's cold, maybe, but why? And why is that like celebrated? Why is that seem amazing? So we've been put in this position and been taught since childhood. Think about your early training. Be a good girl. Turn that frown around. Listen, if you don't have anything nice to say,
don't say anything at all. That's
what they're saying. And so nobody's like, I care how you really feel. I mean, that's not there. Please assert yourself, because I can't wait to respect your boundaries. It's like, be accommodating. Be pleasant. Why do you think you walk on the street and men will be like, why aren't you smiling? Like, mind your own business. Like, why aren't you smiling? Or who even cares? And stop talking to me. Like, but there's this feeling that it's okay for someone to do that, that we are required to make, you know, twist ourselves up in a pretzel and light ourselves on fire to make sure everyone else is comfortable and warm. And this is the ultimate. And with HFCs, if we get into the traits, so we understand the childhood of what it's about. We were trained, right? Most of us were raised and praised to be self-abandoning codependents. That's it. That's a fact. So we come at it from a detriment, right? It's not just that it's hard to set boundaries and assert ourselves and tell the truth. And it's we come at this from a detriment, because we were taught these limiting beliefs about what it means to be feminine and female and what is right and the way that we should behave and all of this stuff and all this judgment that is out there, especially now with like trad wives and all that. You're like, oh my God, just what we need. Anyway. So let's
thank you.
Yeah, please. No, like, my God, how are we here again? Anyway, we know how. Moving on. Let's hit some traits. So I want the people who are listening to be able to see do you see yourself in these? And then we'll talk about some solutions. Feeling responsible for fixing other people's feelings. Overgiving, right? Going above and beyond. A lot of times we're doing things for people they haven't even asked us to do. We just think they need to be done. Being frustrated when other people don't take our advice, feeling exhausted, resentful, bitter, perhaps, hyper-independence, where we really suck at receiving. We're not great at letting other people do things for us. We're not great at asking for other people to do things for us. We are auto-advice givers. Can't stop giving you our good advice. I could barely know you. It could be like my mailman. And I'd be like, you know, Phil, I had a thought. Like, literally, why? Anybody. I could be bossing you around. So auto-advice giving. Auto-accommodating. And I talk about this in the book, where I was at my hair salon in New York City and it was a busy Saturday. I didn't usually go there on Saturdays because it was so insane. And there was a mask on my hair. So I'm laying in the sink, but like, you're not doing anything when there's a mask on your hair. And now suddenly the sink line is getting backed up and there's one person waiting and I'm just laying there like an idiot, not doing anything. And then two people and then four people and I'm all every new person that's waiting, I'm more and more stressed out where I have to do something. So I finally raise my hand and bring the girl over and I'm like, hey, you know, I could move. Like, I don't need to sit here because I have 20 more minutes on this mask. And she was like, relax, lady. We do this every Saturday. I think we got it. And right? Like, why?
Let me do my job, please.
Why are you worried about our sink flow? How about listen to a podcast and shut up? Anyway, so I left there thinking, wow, this is insane. Like, first of all, it can't just be me. Secondly, I could have been, why does it matter? Because there was a billion better things I could have been doing with my mind and my nervous system than being worrying about something that is not on my side of the street at all, that has nothing to do with me. I could have been listening to a podcast or talking to my mother or doing nothing, just resting my exhausted brain. But I wasn't doing any of those things. And then I did a quick video about it and put it on YouTube and it just went viral. People were like, holy crap, me too. And oh my God. So this is X number of years ago. And I knew I was really onto something with the high functioning codependency. I just kept having more and more behaviors. And of course, hello, most of them were my own behaviors. So no judgment for me, but I do know that that auto-accommodating is exhausting. Anticipatory planning is another trait where you know you're going to be with difficult people. You're like, okay, so let's make sure I have the booze that they like to drink, make sure that I know that one doesn't talk to that one. I won't meet, I'll make sure they don't sit together. Like we're anticipating any problems that could come up and figuring out the solution before the problem even comes up, right? It's exhausting. And then you have the overfunctioning and underfunctioning dynamic. So as I used to say, like I could, in my 20s, I could take a perfectly functional boyfriend and turn him into an underfunctioner in 2 weeks or less. You understand what I mean? Being like, I got it. I got it. I got it. And I remember saying to my mother, I was living with a boyfriend at the time. And I was like, this guy doesn't know how to vacuum or brown garlic. Like every time he goes to brown and he burns it, like, I don't get it. My mother was like, okay, first of all, your father never touched a pan or a vacuum. So let him do it. And she said, you know, Tara, if you need everything done your way, which is very HFC, she's like, you'll end up like me. You'll be doing it all and you'll be doing it all alone. So let him burn the garlic. Let him vacuum how he vacuums. Just leave him alone. Like, just be grateful he's wanting to contribute. But of course, I was way far away from being in recovery. I was way young. I was like, no, I'm going to teach him how to brown garlic without burning it or whatever the thing was. So the over and under functioning dynamic is really there in, and does it create, like, it's hard to know chicken or the egg. Like, is that person under functioning because you're such a control freak that they know you're not going to like the way they do it. You're not going to do it in the right time frame or whatever, or is it, are they feigning incompetence, right? We have, you know, there's a whole stuff. And I cover all of this in the book. Like, there's all kinds of versions of why you end up doing everything. But so much of it is because you want it done a particular way. So those are the traits of high functioning codependency.
Okay. So thanks for explaining that so succinctly and hilariously. And what I kind of want to dive into, but I'm kind of afraid to talk about, is this codependent, high functioning codependent and maybe covert narcissist or overt narcissist.
Sure.
Magnetism. Like, I appreciate how you've already brought in the patriarchy and, you know, the gender norms. And I don't want the listener to think, I don't think that's where you're coming from, but I just feel like I need to say, because maybe I'm worried about everybody's feelings, that I don't want anyone to think that we're blaming them for falling into this dynamic, or maybe I don't want to blame myself for falling into this dynamic. But when I read the chapter about Leia and Andy in the book, which is chapter 5, I was like, oh my gosh, I recognize right away. It was like I saw on paper something that I've experienced at least twice, once in a romantic relationship and once in a business relationship. And I mean, I was really grateful to see it. And then I was also like, oh no, what does this mean for me? Like, I've got some reading to do after we finish. But can you talk about that draw, that thing that happens?
Well, let's look at it this way. When you think about HFCs, right, which is codependency, which are, most of the time we're empaths. a lot of times we're also highly sensitive people. So we're super capable. We're very motivated. So, and then you have a narcissist. So a narcissist is like, hey, man, it's me and the universe. It's all about me. And as a codependent, you're like, oh, amazing. It's all about you. Let me make it all about you. Let me give you what you need. Let me please you. Because we're also people pleasers. Let me fulfill those needs. So it's a match made in heaven until all hell breaks loose. And it will eventually, because eventually, right, if we think of the cycle of abuse in narcissistic relationships, is we start out with we're going to be love bombed, which most people know what that means. It means that there's, first of all, in a romantic relationship, usually it means too much too soon, where the person is future pacing, talking about like next summer, and you've been dating for 3 weeks. You're like, are we literally talking about a year and a half from now right now? Like, trying to make you feel secure. I really want you to meet my mother. You know, I have friends in France, like all of this stuff. You're so special. And obviously the narcissist thinks you're so special because they're so special that for you to be with them, you would have to be incredibly special. And here's the thing. Narcissists, a lot of them are super magnetic. This is not just, you know, someone who's like toxic, right? This is, a lot of times these are people they are so charismatic. They are so, you know, it might be amazing in the beginning with the love bombing. They're taking you away. Sex is unbelievable. They're making you feel like you've never felt before. It's like this incredible euphoria. Like, is this too good to be true? Yes, girl, it is. So let's just be aware.
It seems too good to be true. It can't be real.
Correct.
It's real. They're holding the door for me. No, this is really a gentleman. Like, holding the door. This is my low standards in my 20s. He held the door for me. Can you believe this guy?
Wow. Keeper. Not. Don't let him get away.
Him. All my friends could have told you. You're with him. In fact, they did say that. Oh, my God.
Same with like three of my boyfriends in my 20s. Everyone was like, excuse me? Why? What? This guy
was
like
you don't understand. We have a special love.
Yes, it's special. We're so special. But what are the things to look out for? When someone is love bombing you, they're accelerating the timeline. And this could be in work as well. It's like familiarity. It's like they're so sure about you. So we have love bombing. Then once they snare you, once you're in their trap, there will come a point. And it could, every relationship has a different cycle. But there'll come a point where the script gets flipped. Something happens. And they're like, wait, you're not going to wear those pants to the party, right? Because I got to be honest, you kind of look fat in them. And you're like, it feels like someone like punched you in the stomach. Where you're like, oh my God, that's so mean. Why would they say that? All right, maybe they're just having a bad day. Okay. So then you start scurrying to get back in favor. There's this cycle, and then eventually there'll be a full discard usually. But then again, they could come hoover and try to get you back as well. So we understand because this can happen to you whether you can have no experience with narcissists. I've had so many clients who did not have a narcissistic parent. Like, it doesn't have to be that. But because you're sensitive and because you're giving and because you're nice, a narcissist who is selfish and self-centered and wants what they want, they're so drawn to your light that they just see you. You just pop out in a crowd to them. So ways to put the brakes. This is what you can do if you find yourself in a relationship or a business relationship.
And it's need to hear this, because I'm telling you, when this happened to me, I was like, I didn't know which way was up. I can't tell you. I was like, I just didn't know what was happening.
Have you ever had those days where everything just feels harder than usual? I've definitely had my fair share, and I totally get how frustrating it can be. Sometimes it's not just stress or lack of sleep. It could be hormones at play. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. Hormone Harmony is an herbal formula that fine-tunes the hormonal system. We often think we need big lifestyle changes to feel better, but in reality, small habits like taking Hormone Harmony every day can have a huge impact on how we feel. Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code CHAT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today. Today's episode is sponsored by Psychotherapy Networker and PESI. If you're a therapist, be sure to check out the partner page, which is linked in the show notes, where you can get discounted trainings with previous Therapy Chat guests like Courtney Armstrong, Dr. Leslie Korn, Dr. Ariel Schwartz, Dr. Tammy Nelson, Dr. Janina Fisher, Rebecca Case, Dr. Peter Levine, Dr. Lindsay Gibson, Deb Dana, Lori Gottlieb, and many others. You'll find the link in the show notes to my partner page with PESI and Psychotherapy Networker, where you can find all these discounted training. If you need CEs, this is a great place to go. Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from client secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
And you get sucked into this vortex, which is why it's so hard for narcissists and codependents to break up. Because you're just like inexplicably drawn to the person. My feeling is this: do not let anyone rush you ever. Put the brakes. If you're dating someone and it seems amazing and you're wondering, is this too good to be true? When they make a plan, put the brakes on. Say, actually, you know what? I can't do Friday because I have plans with my girlfriends already. It will be unlikely that they will be able to hide their rage at how ungrateful you are that they made a plan and you had some nerve to have some friends that you wanted to do something with, or they'll fully ignore you. You'll say, I can't go out on Saturday. They'll continue forward as if you're going out on Saturday, right? So you have to be able to tap the brakes and even say, this is great. And I want to slow it down a little bit. Oh my God, I thought we felt the same way. I can't believe, like, if there's an overreaction to that request, if they're insulted, they're offended by you.
Yes.
This is how you know you should really pump the brakes. If they go, okay, I totally get it. I am enjoying myself and I respect your need to see your friends or to pump the brakes, whatever it is. That's like a normal person is like, okay, I can respect that you have a different thing than me and it doesn't mean you're doing anything bad to me. So because once we're in a relationship like this, you know, part of what I talk about in the book is all the different ways that it doesn't just have to be narcissists. It could be narcissists or other cluster B personality disorders, let's just say, that, and a lot of times it's untreated stuff. With narcissists, you know, there's no good data about, they're not bringing themselves to therapy because they think you're the problem. So like, I don't think we have any reliable data about how many narcissists there are out there. I mean, Dr. Romani thinks that there's like a billion more than is ever reported because the likelihood of them being like, I'm the problem, it's me, is like zero. So we don't think that there's reliable reporting there. But the manipulation tactics, and when you're a decent person, what happens, Laura, is that in my experience is that we positively project our good qualities onto other people. So we make this generous assumption that other people are like us. And if you're a decent person and you're not a manipulative person, it doesn't like enter your mind to be all self-protective because you're like, no, I'm sure they didn't mean it like that. Like we make excuses. So the antidote to that is to slow down, is to pay attention to people's behavior? Where does their behavior not match their words? Where do they not follow through? Where are they trying to alienate you from other people in your life? And that doesn't happen in the love bombing stage, right? That will happen once you actually are ensnared in the relationship, where they don't like your friends. They don't like your family. They think this one's an idiot and this one's a jerk. They never get their due in life. And let's talk a little bit, if we could, about the difference between covert and overt narcs.
Sure.
So overt narcs are the ones that most people know about. They're the ones who are, you know, hogging the proverbial mic, as I like to say, right? It's all about them. They're telling all the stories. They're charming. They're out there. They're probably good looking. You could have a parent who's a narcissist and your friends are like, oh my God, your mom is so cool. You know, and you're like, oh my God, what a friggin' nightmare. No, she's not. But to the outside world, it, you know what I mean? Because you, if you have a mother who's a narcissist, she's trying to be friends with your friends, right? Like completely ridiculously inappropriate, but there you go. So we know what the overt narc looks like. Bragging, exaggerating, self-aggrandizing. Okay. Kind of loud, right? Right. We see them. Covert narcs are even scarier. Because those people are quiet. They can present as kind of insecure, maybe socially awkward, but there is the same meaning. They still think they're superior in life. They're so jealous of other people. They believe that they should be at the same level. They love to be like elevated by association. Do you ever have friends who are, and my husband had this guy who's a friend, and I'm not saying, whatever, I do believe he probably was a covert narc, but he couldn't stop telling you about other people's pedigree. He'd be like, oh yeah, my friend John, he went to Yale, he did this thing. Oh yeah, this one went to, he works at IBM, makes $1.5 million a year. Like, it was like by association, elevating his status by him associating with what he thinks are the high status people that he should. Also, covert narcs always feel like they got the raw end of the deal in life. Oh yeah. It's easy for him when his father, oh yeah, be nice. Someone paid for my college. I wouldn't have debt either. It must be nice. Like, so begrudging other people of their any good fortune, because it's all a competition for them. Yes, and they feel like they got screwed. And they're so dangerous because they do the same. Both end up doing the same thing, which is just tearing you down until you are like a shell of your former self, just with the gaslighting, which is, of course, challenging your reality, you know, lying a lot of times, just bold-faced lying to your face, being like, that's not what happened, right? That it didn't happen like that. They'll use peer pressure, saying, listen, I wasn't going to say anything, but John thinks you're off the rails too. I mean, he said something to me the other day. I didn't want to say anything to you, but he also thinks you're losing it. Like, there's so many manipulation tactics that we, as empaths or highly sensitive people, and are as high functioning codependents or just codependents, you have to pay attention to how your body feels, right? If you have a clenched chest, a throat, a pain in your head when you're with this person, when they say the mean thing, when they say, oh, you're not wearing those pants, are you? Make note. Call them out. I had a client who had this guy who I think is pretty narcissistic, but I wouldn't say, you know, that he personality disorder per se, but they were driving somewhere and she made a wrong turn. And he was like, what are you, an idiot? Said it kind of kidding. And she was like, are you kidding me? You're kidding, right? The next day sends her flowers at work. She was like, listen, buddy, let me tell you something. Whatever that is, I'm not doing that. So do not ever talk to me that way ever again. And if you do, we're absolutely done. And do not do something shitty and then send me flowers ever. I don't want flowers. I want a real conversation. I want an actual apology. And if that isn't you, if you feel compelled to call me an idiot, then you're not my person. And they're married now and he doesn't do that anymore. But she was so like, and what that proves to me about him is that he isn't a narcissist, right? He could tolerate, and he loved her and didn't want to lose her, and he stopped that behavior.
Sometimes like he could learn.
Yes. And sometimes it's just putting the limit and saying, this is my boundary. And it doesn't make that guy a terrible guy, right? He isn't a terrible guy, but he needs to get it together. And that is not okay. Like when you look at boundaries, for that client, that was a deal breaker. And I was like, good for you for just being like, I am so clear that no, this does not work for me. But if you did that with someone who is a narcissist, it would blow up into a huge thing. By the end of that conversation, you'd somehow be apologizing. That's how crafty they are. You're like, how did this script get flipped? I don't even know. What am I? I started this conversation with a problem that I had with you. And then suddenly you're like, oh my God, don't be mad at me. It is so scary.
Yeah, it's so confusing with the manipulation and the gaslighting. It's like, wait, am I being a jerk? Like, how'd that happen? But I think for myself, like when I was younger, and when I say when I was younger, I mean up until maybe 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago, my self-esteem was like so low. My self-worth was so low that I really felt like, you know, if somebody was mad at me, it was my fault. I didn't have really the discernment to say, did I actually do anything wrong? You know? And I think that I wasn't raised in an abusive family, but it was, you know, the dynamics were, I'll just keep saying, not ideal. And it's like what you were saying about the, you know, connecting, associating with people who have high achievements and stuff. It seems like that's such a normal thing in our culture for men, but it's kind of like a masculine, maybe it's a kind of a toxic masculine type of trait, but just to be like always talking about money, always talking about power, and always kind of putting power and money on a pedestal. Maybe it's partly where I live now too. It's really pronounced here. You know, it's like, well, I live in Maryland, but you know, people are like, oh, my neighbor's a professional baseball player and they blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, oh, you're cool just because your next door neighbor is a professional baseball player. It's like, that is cool, but you're not a professional baseball player. Exactly. Nothing against you. And also they're not extra special because they're a professional baseball player. They're just very talented at baseball, you know?
Right,
so,
right.
You know, it's, that's what makes it confusing for me. Cause even as you're talking, some of the things I'm going, do I do that? Am I, you know, wait, was I the jerk or were they the jerk or?
But is it dysfunctional?
I think this is part of it for me is that I gaslight myself.
Yes. Yes. And think about why though, Lord. Listen, you make sense. Your mind makes sense. And you know, as the therapist, right? We do what we do for really good reasons.
Yes.
So the self-blame is because this is how we stayed safe as kids.
Yes.
So if I couldn't deal with the truth about my parents, like who could? So if I could be like, well, if I were just better, then my father wouldn't have wished I was a boy. And then, you know what I mean? There's hope that I could do something. If it's my fault, there's hope to change it. If I have to see the situation for what it is, now I'm completely unempowered and have to be like, holy crap, these people have super limitations and I'm only 7. Like, I've got a long time in this pit.
I got to figure out a way to make this thing work.
Exactly. And your mind, your unconscious mind, does exactly that. Now, that was adaptive in childhood. Of course, it becomes maladaptive in adulthood. And so part of what I walk you through in the book as well is really looking at real self-esteem and self-worth. Because as HFCs, so much of the time, we look at our achievements to give us the temporary sense of worthiness, right? Which is why so many of the women in my sphere and drawn to my work are these super high achieving, like the CFOs and, you know, the masters of the universe, but they're exhausted. They're burnt out. They have autoimmune disorders and TMJ and they can't sleep and perimenopause is killing them. But they're not slowing down, right? They're still full steam ahead with all the things that they need to do because they don't want to let anyone down. So what can we do, right? How do we get on the other side? How do we get into recovery from being a high functioning codependent? And there's three things that I could say that I think are super important.
One, I sit at your knee like a pet. I'm like, let's hear it. What can we do?
Help. Well, yes. We want to go from auto advice giving, which is a heavy lift for us, even if it comes naturally, to asking expansive questions. When people come to you and they say, Laura, you're a therapist. What should I do? You say, okay, before I weigh in, you tell me what you think you should do, because that is infinitely more important than I think you should do. Even if the person says they don't know, it's still more important because it's their freaking life. So start training people that you don't have all the answers because you don't have to. And the truth is you don't. Ask them if they come to you though and say, but I want to know what you think. I'll always say, hey, listen, when we're done brainstorming and you're done telling me, because I'm most interested in what you think, I'll give it my 2 cents. But again, I always, whether it's a 6-year-old, a 16-year-old, or a 60-year-old, I always start with, what do you think you should do? Because what is the message we want to give to kids, teenagers, and other people? They are fully capable. People have a right to succeed and fail, to thrive and to flail. But as HFCs, we don't like people flailing in our vicinity. Please do not flail near me. We're like, flail somewhere else. And part of our process of getting into recovery is learning. We have to tolerate being uncomfortable. We have to tolerate disappointing people, right? One thing that people can do right now is take a resentment inventory. You want to know where you might be overfunctioning? Who are you resenting and why? Then ask, once you go, okay, it's my husband and I'm resenting that he says he's going to mow the lawn, but doesn't do it or whatever. I don't know. Thinking of some pedestrian thing. Then the next thing is, what is my 50% of this problem? I let it go on. I continue to think he's got to mow the lawn, even though he never does. Like, what is my 50% of this? And then is there an action I can take to make it better? And that's you know, I walk you through that in the guide as well. I think what we have to really realize with being HFCs and doing all this overfunctioning stuff is that it is really bad for your relationships, but it's bad for your health.
Yeah.
I want you to, the third thing I want to say is self-consideration has to be your top priority. And I specifically and on purpose don't call it self-love and don't call it self-care, because self-consideration is a bigger umbrella. And it means that before you do another thing this year, before you take on one more thing, you're going to ask yourself these 2 questions. Do I have the bandwidth to take this on without becoming resentful? Do I even want to do it? Do I even want to do it? We don't even let ourselves ask. And it is righteous to ask. Maybe you don't want to do it, and that's okay. We don't have to want to do everything that people want us to do. And we don't, which is why you walk around resentful.
Yeah.
It's okay to just be like, hey, not my thing. You know, people used to, when I was younger, invite me to do crap. I didn't want to do, like, you know, go to outdoor concerts or whatever, which I hate. And, you know, I'd do it and then be resentful. And then I was like, why am I acting like my friend invented the outdoor concert? She's not going to be offended. I don't like it. Bugs, sun, people singing. No, thanks. It's not my thing. I do not like it. People now don't ask me because they know it's not my thing. And that's not about me rejecting them. That's about me not liking outside concerts. And I think that we need to value and prioritize how we feel, what we think, and what we want. And here's the thing. How you feel, what you think, and what you want is important, but it has to be important to you more than what anyone else wants, thinks, and feels. Anyone. Kids, partner, parents, business partner, doesn't matter. Because here's the thing. We can choose to compromise. We do. If you're in a family, if you're in a relationship, if you're in a marriage, if you have kids, of course you're compromising, duh, because nothing would run if you didn't. But when we prioritize other people above ourselves, this is the recipe for ultimate resentment and martyrdom. Because what ends up happening is that down the road, trust me, when people are 25, they're like, I can't wait to grow up and become a martyr. Nobody wants that. Nobody is thinking that. But people grow up to be martyrs, right? Think about how many people you know who are martyrs in their life right now. Like, I didn't get my due for everything I do for you. You need to do this for me. Like, ew, we don't want that. And that comes from this consistent self-abandonment, where then we start feeling like people owe us because of all the things I've done for you. So we really have to look at what you think, how you feel, and what you want, and base your decisions. That has to come into the mix. It doesn't mean you're never going to do crap you don't want to do. Of course you will. But if you're making a mindful and conscious decision about it, instead of feeling obligated, instead of feeling forced, instead of feeling like I don't have a choice, those are the feelings that create resentment for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm. Love the clear way that you explain this. I got to tell you one more thing. I was talking to a friend who's a therapist, and we were talking about, like, how do you allow people to be who they are, and but you don't like them? And without you are then a jerk that you like, how do you just be like, I mean, what I've been trying is that just isn't my vibe. But it's like, you know, there's this weird thing of like, well, if I don't like them, am I bad? Are they bad? And it's so dumb because it's not that simple. Nobody's bad, but right, you know,
right. But the little kid
in
you,
so confusing. Yeah.
But the kid feels afraid. And what I'm saying is give her the confidence to like who she doesn't like. I'm always curious. If I have a visceral reaction to someone, I know exactly why I don't like people if I don't like them. And then I go out of my way to spend as little time with them as possible because that is my job for me. If it's someone that I need to spend time with and it's something that I think can change or it's something that they're trampling on something of mine, I'll have a hard conversation. Hey, when I'm talking, often you're interrupting or often you're on your phone and it really hurts my feelings. So I'd like to make a simple request that when we're together, we put our phones in the basket that I have at my front door so that we can actually be together, right? You either have
no more explaining, nothing else. It's just that.
Yeah, no. And you don't need to write a dissertation on your no. Your no is valuable. Not wanting to do something is a really good reason not to do it. And it doesn't mean we won't do crap we don't want to do. Of course we will. We live in a society where it's required. But when you can not do things you don't want to do, it's really important that you don't force yourself to do crap you don't want to do all the time when you actually could opt out. Value resting. Value allowing yourself to refuel. Right? We don't do that. Like we're great. We want you to take care of yourself, but we don't do a great job if you're an active HFC of taking care of yourself. And it's important because what people get when we're frazzled and exhausted and resentful, which is where we end up at a certain amount, you know, there's only so long we can do all the things for all the people. Nobody's getting the best of you.
Right.
Nobody's getting the best of you. And you're not getting the best of you. This is your one and only life. I mean, not to quote Cher, but this is not a dress rehearsal. Like we are live right now. This is it. So make changes, power pivot, claim your life. This is the one and only time around this time. If you believe in multiple lives, great. Maybe you'll have another time. But this time is here now. You don't have to put up from your brother-in-law that you don't like. Don't. Stop doing crap. If you're doing all this crap at the holidays that you really are over, change it. You know what? I don't want to cook for everything. Potluck it is. I'm exhausted. So if you guys want to come, you can come. I will assign people food or you can tell me what you want to bring. Like, we don't need it to be perfect and we don't need to do everything. And that is not the way we're going to enjoy our lives. Life is messy. And this is one of the things when you get into recovery from being a high function codependent, that we have to let the chips fall where they may when they're not our mother chips. Pardon my French, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is like inspirational, like masterclass here. I'm really grateful to you. I love you're hilarious. I love the way you say things and explain these things so simply and straightforward, because it needs to be really simple and straightforward because it's complicated and confusing inside. So yes. I'm really, really grateful. I'm definitely going back to read the rest of this as soon as possible and do a lot of work in it.
And I have a gift for you guys too.
Oh, awesome.
So this is for your listeners because I know we talked about a lot and it can be overwhelming. So I created an HFC toolkit for you guys. Go to terrycole.com/HFC for high functioning codependency. And there's a simplify and do less video that I created. It's like a video lesson and a PDF. There's a self-love meditation. There's a power of no meditation. And then there's other things. You can actually buy the book on that one as well. And there's different things that I'm doing that you can see there.
Beautiful. I will definitely link to that in the show notes. And what's the name of your podcast so that people can find it? Because I bet there's lots of amazing nuggets there. The Terry Cole Show. Awesome.
And I release two episodes a week.
Ooh, Wow. Power.
Exhausted. Why? Why so many? Why so much free? But I do, because I want everyone to have good mental health. And I feel like it can't just be for people with money. It just
That's
can't.
Right.
Just unfair.
That's right. And everyone needs support, regardless of what your financial situation is. So I really appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate you. I'm so grateful that you shared some time with me today. And I think that I can't wait to share this with my audience. They're going to love it. So thank you so much, Terry, for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Thank you so much, Laura, for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Great. Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts, 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Regan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.